SMQBs. We're taking a quick winter break this week, but want to replay one of our most popular episodes, where we had a good friend of the show, Jerry Bembry of Anscape and ESPN, come talk to us about the great Jim Brown and the state of the NBA with Ja Morant and his troubles back in May of 2023. And be sure to tune in next week for a special pod when we bring Jerry back to the show to talk to us about his recent documentary, 8 on 8, about Kobe Bryant and his influence on 8 people that is now playing on ESPN. We will see you in 1 week.
SMQBs, this is episode 116, a very special episode. We're really lucky to be joined by Jerry Bembry of Anscape to talk about Jim Brown, Ja Morant, and NBA playoffs. It's a really great discussion. You're going to enjoy it, no doubt about it. We also talk PGA Championship, Punchable Face, Lasso, and one quick buzzer beater. Check us out. Leave us 5 stars. Thanks for listening. It's when the people climb up on the booth, hanging from the people on the people. My hits the roof, dancing on the ceiling on the people. I got people on the dancing on the people. I got people. 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 Dancing on the people. I got everybody. SMQBs, this is episode 116. We are still going strong here. This is going to be a great episode. We have a special guest. I'm going to let Rooster introduce him in a second. But before we do that, obviously, we're going to have a lot of talk about the great Jim Brown today. And I think it's almost cliche at this point to talk about his lacrosse career, because everybody sort of mentioned that, but I did want to just give a couple of quick highlights on his lacrosse career, even though he's a Syracuse guy. That's very hard for me to deal with. But I mean, he was a two-time All-American, 56 and 57 at Syracuse. As a senior in 57, he scored 64 points and was ranked second in the nation with 43 goals. I don't know. Not everybody here follows lacrosse. That's a lot of goals in a season.
He was probably the best lacrosse player in the country at that time.
Yeah. He is, if not maybe the greatest ever still.
Yeah.
And even if you said he was just the greatest to come out of Syracuse, that would be saying something.
Right.
But
right.
Probably the greatest ever. So anyway, I just wanted to get that out there to start with.
He also lettered in basketball at the same time while he was at Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, just unbelievable. Rooster, why don't you?
I thought he was the star of the Dirty Dozen. I didn't realize he played football.
Yeah, I love that movie, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Rooster, why don't you take it away from here, and we'll jump into the great conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, we're really happy to have a great friend of the show with us again tonight, Jerry Bembry, who's a senior writer at Anscape, which kind of traces its history back to ESPN, the magazine, and the Undefeated, or at least Jerry does. And he also knows way more about the NBA than three or four of us hacks. So we're going to cover a little NBA with Jerry. But first, we really just are excited to kick it off with some discussion about Jim Brown. I mean, we all know that Jim Brown is the greatest football player ever. We're not going to spend any time on that. That's been covered by everybody under the sun. Like Bison said, he was probably also the greatest lacrosse player ever. Just the best all-around athlete I could ever think of during my lifetime, except for maybe Bo Jackson. But what I'd really like to talk about with Jerry, because, you know, I know you've covered this a little bit, and I'm wondering if you had the good fortune to ever meet Jim Brown, but we'd like to talk about his impact on civil rights in this country.
Yeah, I never met him. And, you know, I just want to go back. You guys mentioned lacrosse. Can you imagine a guy as big and strong as Jim Brown?
Yeah.
No. Lacrosse field. I mean, it's unbelievable. But,
yeah.
You know, Brian has that picture of the Ali Summit that, you know, Jim Brown was an organizer on. You have some of the greatest athletes in the world and a couple of politicians, but, you know, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, then Lew Alcindor.
Look how young he looks. He's got this baby face.
Exactly. And you know, and I'm sure he was in awe I've read some stuff, but he was in awe just to be invited to that moment at such a young age. But, you know, Muhammad Ali had taken a stand about not going to war. And, you know, he was very outspoken and he was penalized and, you know, he lost his titles, threatened with jail. And Jim Brown organized a summit to stand with him and to speak up for him. And, you know, he was one of the guys that was a true activist in sports. And he continued that for the rest of his life. And yeah, he was a great individual, a great football player. 8 rushing titles in 9 years in the NFL, which is just amazing. Went on to become a Hollywood actor. And the reason why, one of the reasons why he stepped away from football was because he was going to miss part of training camp while he was doing his movie role. And the owner said, well, you have to be here. Jim Brown called up and said, you know, I quit. And he came back. So
he was the MVP of the league the year before.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just unbelievable.
It's like the ultimate, like, call your bluff move, right?
Yeah.
Totally. I quit.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the Cleveland Browns. I mean, they got the greatest player, you know, the NFL's all-time rushing leader, and he decides to walk away. I'm sure that hurt them at the turnstile, but that was a man who was not unafraid to speak up, to stand up for his principles, and he should be admired for that.
You know, Pope, your photo brings back memories. I've told you guys about growing up with my mother, who was maybe the weirdest history teacher in the world and decorated my bedroom. And, you know, whatever history course she was teaching that year, it could be African studies, it could be women's studies, but all of a sudden my bedroom became decorated with photographs of her topics. And I would intersperse some baseball and basketball posters among it, but that was one of them. And then she talked at an early age about the Cleveland summit because she didn't like sports at all, and she knew I loved it. So that was her way of sort of getting me to think about the world by talking about prominent athletes who played a role in the civil rights movement. And this was one of my earliest memories of these guys. And the sad thing is, Jerry, I can't think of another instance since then. This was 1967, where any athlete stood up and took a political stand like that for another athlete.
Well, you had our Olympians in 1968 Olympics.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that was, you know, that was definitely for the cause, but not for another, you know, not for another athlete.
And you got these athletes from all sports standing up there too. So, I mean, it's just commendable. And, you know, Bill Russell, who we just recently lost as well in his own right, was a great activist and really spoke up about things that were affecting Black people in the country. So you see athletes make those stands today, but you don't see athletes put themselves at risk as much as these guys did back then.
Yeah.
Athletes who do today have guaranteed contracts that they can fall back on. And, you know, they were giving up their livelihood. You know, their livelihood was threatened by doing that. So it's really commendable what they did.
Well, we hear you that you've got a really fun event to go to with your daughter tonight, an ESPN event. So we're going to try to speed this up so you can get out. Let's go from sad to mad and talk about your article recently called "Who Does Ja Morant Want to Be?" We all read it. It was a great article. I commend it to all of our listeners. It's on Anscape.com. And, you know, you seem to be advocating for a 1-year suspension for Ja. Tell us about that.
You know, I think he needs a significant suspension just because right before the most recent incident with a gun, 2 months before, Ja Morant sat on a TV program and apologized for his actions and said it wasn't him and said it wasn't his gun. And, you know, he said everything that you need to say to dodge major punishment. And for him to come back 2 months after that interview with Jalen Rose and to do it again, and this has nothing to do with Second Amendment gun rights, because, you know, that's the Second Amendment. You're allowed to have guns, but he has guns in public places. You know, he had a gun in a strip club the first time. He's got a gun in a car the second time. And so much can go wrong. And Charles Barkley once famously said, "I am not a role model," but athletes are role models, and people do follow, mimic what they do. And if Ja Morant is in a club, if Ja Morant is in a car, pulling a gun, holding it carelessly, then kids are going to do the same thing as well. And we have enough of a problem with gun violence and deaths, especially among the African-American community, for kids to say, this is okay. And so I think that Ja Morant the first time went into, they said he went into a facility in Florida and maybe it lasted 8 days, 10 days, whatever. But I think he needs a bigger punishment to think about what he did, the impact on other people that he has. And I think a year without pay, maybe it's a half a season without pay, either one of those I think would be significant and make him realize that, you know what, the NBA can discard me at any time. You know, there's another guy who's coming up behind me who can fit my role. And you know, I need to, you know, check myself and really figure things out and do the right thing. And so I hope he does, because I like him as a ball player. I think he's exciting. You know, he makes Memphis a winner. He gives that team its backbone. But you're only as good as your best player. And if your best player is immature, then that means your whole franchise is going to be immature. They're going to follow the leader. The player is going to say, well, if Ja can get away with this, then why can't I get away with this? So I think for the Memphis Grizzlies franchise, I think it's important for them to help him get right and make sure that he gets the help he needs to come back and be the player that we all think he is.
You know, you mentioned in your article that he's bordering on or in Antonio Brown territory here with his behavior. And, you know, it's always kind of
I don't want to be there.
Funny to say Antonio Brown is batshit crazy, but I actually think he has some mental health problems and needs some help. And it's kind of sad. It's, I mean, something more than just being immature here going on with Ja Morant. What is he doing?
It could be the circle that you run with. And, you know, it's funny. I was on a panel this past weekend with Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf, and he was saying that, you know, if you're, and he wasn't speaking about Ja, but he just made this example. He said, if you're not physically fit, you should hang around physically fit people to inspire you. You know, if you lack intelligence in a certain topic, you should hang around those people to inspire you, because that, you know, that gets you to that level or make you want to be at that level. And I think Ja needs to be around better people in his life. And maybe Ja's that bad influence on the other guys. I don't know. I don't know what it is, because, you know, the guy, his friend, took the Instagram live video, and no one told Ja. Ja knew exactly where he was at. And, you know, his instinct was to pull a gun. So was that the friend being a bad influence because he was on Instagram live? Or was that Ja just doing something really not too smart for pulling a gun, knowing he's on Instagram live, knowing he was on Instagram live last time? So
Jerry, who are the grownups in the room that need to step up and take control of Ja's future?
Yeah, you know, I think that perhaps the Memphis Grizzlies are in a situation where they should sign a veteran guy. You know, Miami Heat has Udonis Haslem, their team, as a veteran guy. He doesn't play, but I'm sure he's a positive influence based on his career and the people he was around in winning championships before. He used to be the backbone of that team. Yeah. And maybe the Grizzlies don't have that guy. Maybe they need that veteran guy to really be a positive influence, because obviously the people in Ja Morant aren't being that right now.
Well, he's not getting it from his dad. We know that.
Even beyond that, though, because Pope, you hit on something that I wanted to ask you about. I think it was a good question, Pope. And even beyond a veteran player on the team, you know, who are really the sort of icons now that these young guys will listen to? I mean, I made a joke about Jim Brown being a Syracuse guy and gave away that I'm a Georgetown guy. And, you know, I was there when Iverson came to Georgetown, and John Thompson was a guy who Iverson, you know, ended up idolizing and credited with everything good that happened in his life at the end of the day. Now, you mentioned that we lost Bill Russell, we've lost Jim Brown. Who are the people now that these guys in the league who have so much, and they're, you know, we talk about the player empowerment movement, which is great in a lot of ways. But, you know, I think this is something even in our law practices, we see that young people, they don't necessarily want advice from the older people. They think they're ready to take on the world, and there's pros and cons of that. Are there leaders in the professional athlete world that some of these superstars who have so much so fast will listen to?
I'm not saying that all coaches have the best influence on players, but Taylor Jenkins, I don't know what kind of coach he is in the locker room. I don't know if he has a full grasp of that Grizzlies team. But we are in a situation today where the players make tens of millions of dollars and the coach may make five or six. So does the coach really have power in that situation? And so I don't know if Taylor Jenkins has that power to really make a stand with Ja. And that's why I say maybe a veteran player, because maybe it's somebody who's in the trenches with you. Maybe it's a veteran, maybe it's an assistant coach who's been through it and who can have that influence. But it's got to be someone around him on a day-to-day basis to really be unafraid to say, you know what, this isn't right, and your career is in jeopardy. Maybe it's a former player like, I hate to say this name, but a Gilbert Arenas, and maybe he's not the best. But a guy who is
speaking of losing a lot of money because of guns.
Right, a guy who had some issues during his career and kind of lost it. He was by 31, he was playing in China. And a lot, part of that was with the gun incident. Part of that was with injuries. But, Gilbert should have had a longer career because he was as talented a guard as we've seen in basketball. But he made some poor decisions off the court. I didn't mention this in my article, and I wish I did. I think about Aaron Hernandez how this guy, during the course of his life at the University of Florida, got a pass. And, when he got to the NFL, people overlooked certain things in his life. And then we see how that story ended up. And you just hate to see Ja Morant end up that way because the talent is so good. And he, this guy is, he can have a Hall of Fame career if he just plays his cards right. He can, by the end of his career, make $750 million, maybe, because his last deal was $197 million. He blew a $39 million bonus. That's 5 years. You figure 5 years from now, he can get another deal and maybe another deal. This is generational beyond generational wealth that's at stake with this guy. And for him to pull a gun and potentially put that at risk is just mind boggling to me. I just don't understand. I really don't. And my daughter, I'm if my daughter was doing stuff like that, I would pull up and say, listen, you got to get this right. I can't tell you how to run your life, but I'm going to tell you what you maybe should be doing. I never want to tell her what to do, but I want to put some alternatives out there, some suggestions out there. And someone needs to do that with Ja. His dad seems to be a guy who wants to be in the spotlight a lot. So maybe he is not the right guy. Obviously, his friends, if you look on their Instagram page, their life revolves around Ja Morant. It's all Ja on their Instagram page. It's not them. It's right. Ja and them, right? So, Ja needs to surround himself with five good people in his life who are really going to set him straight and be an inspiration to him and just be positive for him.
And like you said, I think he needs time to think. I mean, if he doesn't get punished severely for his last action, then, he's going to get the wrong lesson from it.
Yeah, if you give him another week, right? If you give him 8 days and he can just sit out and come back and like nothing happened, that's not going to do it. It's got to be the significant amount of time. And that's, time, money lost, not being in the spotlight, not helping your team. I think all that would have an impact on, him maybe turning the corner.
I mean, you wonder about a coach like Popovich, somebody like Spo. Potentially.
Spo's doing it well these
Or
days.
Spo, but man, Pop is the godfather. I mean, if anybody's going to have an influence, it'd be somebody like him, maybe.
Yeah. Pop and Spo, because he's an extension of Pat Riley. Pat Riley's still around that organization, and he's one of the most respected guys. All the big time stars who came and played for Miami, they had to respect Pat Riley did during the course of his career, and Riley has a big influence on that on what the people on that team do. And again, I don't know what the Memphis Grizzlies have in terms of in their coaching staff and their organization that can be that guy.
Well, that goes back to my guy Iverson too, who I'm obsessed with. But he went from Thompson to Larry Brown, right? And Larry Brown that fit for some reason. They fought, right? But when he's given his Hall of Fame induction speech, that was another father figure to him, and all his success again, he would give to Larry Brown too. So sorry, Mel.
No, I mean, I think you're hitting a great point, Jerry, because we live in this culture now of success, winning, immediate success and winning. So is the Grizzlies coach incentivized to suspend him, to lose the best player? What about the Grizzlies ownership and all of the money that is involved in these sports now? So, and even all the way up to the NBA leadership. So how do we help these guys when he doesn't have a good circle of influence, he doesn't have family, friends. And then on the other side, this culture of winning is basically saying, I don't want to suspend this guy for a year. I'm going to keep letting him get away with these.
It's got to be the commissioner.
Yeah, it's got to be commissioner stepping in for this one. And, you know, Adam Silver's interview during the playoffs, speaking about this, you can see how hurt he was because he thought Ja was being sincere. And even though it would hurt the Grizzlies, you know, say you suspend him for half a year, it hurts him for half a year. But hopefully you get Ja back for 10 more years.
Right.
If you let him walk this path right now, then you might lose him forever. And I'd rather have 10 years of Ja Morant being a great player than losing him forever.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
By the way, Adam Silver seems like a good guy who cares about not just the dollars, not just the league, but about the players. I don't know. Maybe that's naive.
Are you contrasting him with Goodell?
Well, I was about to. Yeah, I was. I might have been going there. But I mean, even without bringing up Goodell, he strikes me as someone, like you said, that he felt you could hear the hurt. And I actually do believe, you know, and I don't know him. Like I said, this could be naive or just stupid. But, I mean, I get that from him, that there's a sort of warmth to him that he cares about these players. And so, you know, hopefully that's he'll do the right thing for the player too.
Yeah, I think Adam does care about the player. I think that Ja is lucky that David Stern is a commissioner, because I think David probably would have been more heavy-handed in his punishment. So yeah, Adam cares, but even as you care, you've been burned in a situation, and
right.
the penalty has to be severe enough to make this player think. And I think I said a year in my article. I think a half year would send the point home.
Yeah.
All right. For our younger listeners, we're going to move on from the boomer portion of the program where we're telling you all how to live your lives and talk about the NBA playoffs. Who here thinks that either the Lakers or the Celtics have a chance of coming back like the 2004 Red Sox? Anyone?
Nope. Nobody.
Nope. Done.
Nope.
I want to hear Jerry's commentary on what does he think happened in Boston? Because I look at that as much more severe than the Lakers. I mean, Lakers weren't even supposed to be there, but Boston, boy, you know, their body language last night was awful.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the teams that are having success this year. So you look at Miami, and offensively, it's constant ball movement, right? They're always in motion, and they're leading the Boston defenders to be off balance. You look at Denver, you know, a lot of guys touch the ball. Joker is such a great passer, constant ball movement. It gets the Lakers off balance. And the Boston Celtics are a one-on-one team. It's almost like my New York Knicks.
They yes, were the exactly.
They're a one-on-one.
I've been yelling about this for weeks now, Jerry. I love Brunson, but my God, he thinks it's him against four or five guys.
Exactly. So it's isolation ball. And so, you know, it's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown running ISO plays. They're not moving the ball offensively as well. And they're taking these one-on-one moves. And the Boston Celtics, you know, the announcers touched on it. They cried so much last night. It's like depending on every play. I picked against Miami in every series this year. I bet Miami fans, ESPN has a list of experts to pick stuff. And I'm every series, even from the play-in, I picked against Miami. So Miami fans probably think that I don't know anything about basketball.
They want you to keep picking against them.
And they're probably right. And when it comes to the Boston, when it comes to Miami Heat, because I never thought once Tyler Hero went down, when Oladipo had his injury, that it was Jimmy Butler and a bunch of other guys, seven undrafted players, and they're in the position they're in today. But it's a reflection on Spoelstra, allowing those guys to play, allowing those guys to make mistakes, not being heavy-handed, just encouraging them. And he hasn't won a Coach of the Year award, but I think he's the best coach in basketball to get this out of this group of guys. is just unbelievable. And Jimmy Butler, he's not a high flyer. He's not fancy, all that stuff. But that guy gets the job done. I really appreciate Jimmy Butler's the way he plays the game. And I think everybody feeds off of him. And that's an unbelievable team. Now, if it's Denver and Boston in the final, Denver and Miami in the final, I'm still picking Denver. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
You know, I can't pick Miami. But yeah, they what they've done has been incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I mean, Kenny said last night on TNT that it looked like Boston was playing like it was the fourth game of a series. They were down 3-0. It was incredible.
I don't know how you explain that. And I think it's frustration. I mean, you know, I used to play ball and you getting your butt kicked up and down the court and you just lose your will sometimes. And you hate to see that in the Eastern Conference Finals. You hate to see that from a time that reached the NBA Finals last year, but that's what Boston did. And it's, you know, they've had a lot of change, you know, coaching situation from a year ago to today. And I just don't know if they can move forward with this team. I don't know if Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum can coexist. I thought they could going into the playoffs this year, but I don't now watching this, I don't know. And I'll say this too about
what about MA and Doka though? Do you think there's a different outcome with him as head coach all year?
I think with the success that they had a year ago, perhaps. But it's when you get to the playoffs, it's completely different. So you can play during the regular season. You're playing Atlanta this night. You got the Wizards this night, the Lakers this night. And you as a player can be effective because they don't have enough time to game plan you, right? So it's only like maybe a day off and maybe that team is on a back-to-back. And so it's not, you know, they see the tape. They know what you can do. But in a seven-game series, when you know who you're playing and you can come up with a game plan to stymie someone, that's what Miami has done to Boston.
Yeah.
And Boston's coaching staff hasn't been able to figure it out. And that's what makes Miami such a great team is because
they know that Jaylen Brown can't dribble in traffic and nobody's moving around for him to pass it to. So that's a pretty simple coaching decision. Whereas Boston's coach has never heard of a double team, I guess.
Would have been interesting if at the beginning of the season, Boston could have convinced one Brad Stevens to come out of the front office and back down to the bench, right? That it might be a little bit of a different situation, but
it could be a different, it could be a difference. I don't know what's wrong with that team because if you look at the makeup of the team, you think, okay, this is solid. But I would love to see, just like with the Knicks, more ball movement, you know, the ISO ball just kills me. In three-point basketball, it's funny. I was taking a walk in Brooklyn today, and I walked by this playground. I'm watching these kids shoot. And there's a guy out there. He's just launching one three after another three after another three. He's got like 20 shots, and he missed them all. And I'm like, but this is what – it's
that's like LeBron.
Right. So you watch basketball today, and you see all these guys just launching three-point shots at will. I see guys drive the lane today and have a layup and kick it out for a three. I'm taking the sure two as opposed to going for the three and –
right.
It's a 3-point shooting league right now. I think the analytics has really screwed it up. That's why I want Denver to win because they have a big man who goes inside or out and they can pound you in the middle and they can get points in the paint. And I just want to see it go back to that style, just a versatile style of basketball, as opposed to everybody launching threes thinking they're a shooter.
Are you surprised at all the Lakers haven't been more competitive?
No. LeBron's 38 years old. They had a lot of change during the course of the season. You know, they bring in D'Angelo Russell late. I mean, it's a lot of Rui Hachimura comes in and he's played well. But it's so much change during the course of a year that you really need that continuity to figure it out. And you know, Miami's had to change over with the injuries, but they have a system that works. And if this was LeBron at 24, I think it would be different. But LeBron at 38, I don't think he can carry it. He's not a defender that he was. He still gets a highlight block. But he's not the guy that's going to, you know, just buckle down and get in you defensively for the entire basketball game. And I think that team has some flaws that I think it's showing right now.
I heard Bill Simmons throw out the Embiid for Anthony Davis straight up trade as a possibility.
he's also got Embiid going to the Knicks.
Yeah. Anyway,
I tell you,
trust our counterpart.
Yeah.
We'll see what GM LeBron comes up with, because he's pulled
right? the That's deals right. out there.
Yeah. He got Anthony Davis there, and I mean they gave up some talented players for Anthony Davis, and for as great as he can be, he's injury prone. In big situations, he's been inconsistent, and from on paper he looks really good, but when it comes down to it, he just hasn't shown it on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
All right, so I think your 30 minutes is about up. Our last thing on the NBA is Melo retired. You sure thing first round Hall of Famer, don't you think?
He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Had a great career.
Another Syracuse guy. Yeah, you guys are killing me, baby.
I was there during that rise that they played the first round game in Albany that year. I covered it for ESPN.com. Great player. When he came to New York, it didn't fit well with me because they gave up so much for him. So I think I held that against
him. Yeah, me too.
Being a Knicks fan, not as
because they could have just waited and gotten him as a free agent. They didn't make that trade. Knicks
been patient and waited. They could have kept that nucleus that they had, and maybe the outcome for the Knicks in the future years would have been greater. But they went and they gutted the team to get him. And as a Knicks fan, I was unhappy with what happened. As a basketball journalist, Melo was a great player. It just didn't do right by my Knicks.
All right, my friend. Thank you again for joining us. It's always great to see you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
Have fun tonight.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, you know, I'm just going to stand in the background, let my daughter do her thing.
And, yeah, I know you're not.
Maybe she can introduce me to some people.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Guys, awesome.
Thank you so much.
See you next time.
Bye.
All righty.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rooster.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. So, you know, I just to follow up on the one thing he was saying there about the Celtics and that team, if that core can go together, like, you know, you wonder, they're not going to get rid of Tatum, right? I mean, Tatum's the guy, but Brown, right? I mean, Brown is he a free agent now, or is he's coming up on it?
He's coming up. I think I can't remember if he is or is about to be, but there's a good chance he's gone.
Yeah, because he's going to be $190, $200 million contract guy.
You can't pay each of them $50 million for these results.
Right. That's right. So, and you know, the guy who's always on the trade list and everybody wants to talk about, but I wonder if Bradley Beal would be a good fit with Tatum.
Interesting.
Just something, you know.
You know, I threw it out there. Can either one of these teams be the 2004 Red Sox who came back after being down 0-3 to my Yankees and then won four straight?
Yeah.
And I think Jimmy Butler answered the question for us when he asked, how is his team doing what they're doing? And he said, because we have a bunch of dogs on this team. The Celtics don't have any dogs on their team.
Yeah.
They're soft. I mean, they're just too
same
soft.
Same as the Sixers.
Yeah.
Same as the Sixers.
I mean, literally, Gabe Vincent, we had him put 29 points in game three. Anybody have that on their bingo card?
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Every night, there's somebody new.
And by the way, the Heat, at the end of the second quarter there, maybe it was the third quarter, but they missed like four open threes in a row. I mean, that game was over, but it could have been over if they had dropped a couple three-pointers that just were open, good looks, and they missed them. I mean, it was – the score is almost not as – it doesn't tell the whole story of that game.
Right. I mean, like Barkley said, he goes, you know, the first – part of the game, the Celtics come down and they jack up like 12 straight threes because that's a team that doesn't want to drive. That's a team that doesn't have the, you know, motivation to go do what it takes.
And
usually
how about
game threes are a dogfight?
How about pouring salt in the wound when Magic Johnson, the Laker, comes out and says, sorry, Celtics fans, your team quit on you.
Well, he didn't like that. He doesn't like to see that, though.
No, but Celtics fans don't want to hear that.
The Celtics legacy means something to Magic Johnson.
It does. You're right.
It makes him more important.
I mean, you're right. Sure. That's right. That's right.
Mazzulla's post-game conference had to have been like one of the lows in Celtic history. He's like, I don't know. I've lost the locker room. I don't have any answers.
He's like, look, need to fire me.
What?
Maybe you should do it tonight before the next game.
Maybe somebody else should coach game four.
Let Horford or Marcus Smart coach it. That's be a better result.
Oh, God.
I don't know. What the hell?
Unbelievable.
You look at a steer in a headlight.
I stopped watching that game before halftime. I texted you guys, this is going to be a blowout. I couldn't even watch it anymore.
Oh, yeah. I turned it off halfway through the third quarter. I was done.
Well, you
were. Yeah, I did. It was way too late for me.
Right.
But I did like your prognostications, like going at a week ago. The review was fun.
Which one? Oh,
your picks.
Yeah. Well,
he picked Miami and Denver.
No.
By the way,
I picked Denver.
Does LA win tonight? Do they get one win?
I think so.
They're going to win tonight.
Yeah, I think LeBron still has a little dog in him, and he's got enough in him to pull out one win.
Yeah,
I don't think the Celtics do.
Yeah. I agree.
And they're the best team left in probably in the NBA right now.
Hope you're right. I mean, I feel like Jerry does. Like, I would pick Miami over Denver, but you also sort of feel like, well, why couldn't? I mean, why not? Right?
Why not? Why not learn from my mistakes every other round?
Right. I mean, I don't know. So, right. Anything else on NBA?
No team that is singing Taylor Swift is going to win an NBA title.
Who's doing that?
Miami.
Yeah. Oh, no,
Miami was. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Jimmy Butler was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you say whatever you want about Jimmy Butler.
Right.
If you gotta have one guy, you know, not taking a shot, but one guy to lead your team in a quarter of basketball, who's in the NBA right now, it's hard not to take Jimmy Butler.
That's actually Hemi.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Hey, Pope. You gotta have very mixed feelings today about a washed up has been from the Lit Club Live.
I can't wait to hear how he spins
Live it. And Let Die.
How is he gonna spin it?
Yeah, well, he is a sponsor of Live, so you know that. I mean, that's
right.
He's been a Live fan all along. We're about to
he hates
that.
It. Right. He hates it when I remind him that he's a sponsor. He's a
closet Live fan.
All right.
I haven't gone back to hear all of the times we talked about it, but I think my comment on Brooks was that the only reason he did it was because of his injuries, and he was afraid that he would never get it back, and this was his opportunity to cash in. I don't think a healthy Brooks Koepka would have ever gone to Live. I think he cares too much about his legacy, and he is right now, you know, clearly the major guy on tour. I mean, all he does is he wins majors. He's got more majors than tour victories. And I don't think there aren't anybody who can say that, you know, going back to Tiger Jack or anybody else. I mean, he's got five majors and four non-majors. So he comes to play when it matters. I mean, I think this, other than the fact that we're all blockheads, and I think we'll talk about that later, this was a fun PGA. And I thought it really, I think we talked about this, I thought it really played out more like a U.S. Open than a PGA. Sometimes in PGAs you get, you know, double-digit winning scores, but Oak Hill has historically been a tough course. It was a U.S. Open course first, and so it played every bit like it. And
well, on a day of downpour rain didn't help, right?
But that rough was punishing, and you know, the Donald Ross sculpted mounds on the greens, it was hard for them to get it a read on them. But I thought we all probably assumed that Scotty was going to run away with it when he was up going into Saturday. And he's had it a couple times in major rounds recently where he stumbles, and third round was it. I mean, he would have won the tournament, but for just a horrific Saturday. And Koepka, you know, initially he looked like he was not even going to be a factor. He was two over after the first day. Didn't look good. In fact, he had to, you know, kind of come on strong at the end of round one just to get where he was. But then he throws out a 66 on Friday, and he's in the mix. And then 66, 67, and, you know, the guy just, he's got ice in his veins. It is a tournament, though, of two bunker shots to me. If Hovland is able to get at least up and down out of the bunker, maybe just get a bogey on 16 instead of a double. I mean, remember, Brooks is only up by one going into the 16th hole. We had three holes of match play with one stroke lead. But then with the double bogey, it was over. And then on that par 3 11th, Brooks hit the ball, and he's just steep into that big face. of the bunker, and he's able to get it up. Now, he didn't make the putt, but it could have been easily a double, and he could have left it in the bunker. He could have buried it in the face like Hovland did. So those two shots really, you know, made the difference in the tournament. But I don't know where you we'll talk about what it really means. I mean, does it legitimize LIV now that they have one of their players has won a major? I'm sure it gives them a boost, a little shot in the arm. I'm sure the shark is running around, you know, high fiving. But does it change anything, you know, as far as the way that?
I think we're ready for a LIV versus PGA
and the LIV
Cup style tournament.
I got to tell you, I think
PGA is afraid of that.
My thought was, LIV is such an afterthought. Nobody cares. Like I just don't think anybody cares. Like, is anybody going to go turn on a LIV tournament now because Koepka won? No, nobody knows where to find them. It's not even a story anymore, right?
Right. The reality and the fans, is the PGA fans don't seem to care either.
Nobody cares.
They're back to rooting for Phil and Brooks, and they're fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unfortunate because you're only going to see these guys at the majors, right? I mean, all this has done is elevated the majors another notch higher because it's the only time you're going to see all the best golfers in the world playing against each other.
What's going on with Dustin Johnson?
He
pulled his back out.
He hurt his back with Paulina, man.
Can you blame him?
I wish I could hurt my back like that.
No, he's not playing well. But I mean, I think, look, the problem for the PGA Tour is when you're not playing a major, it's completely devaluing the regular status weekend tournaments outside of majors because
they're watered down with talent.
Their talent's not there. By the way, it wasn't just Brooks yesterday. I think they had how many in the top five? Two in the top five. Like Bryson was there, right?
Yeah,
he played like shit yesterday.
Yeah, he played like shit, but he still is top 10. I think they have six LIV players in the top 15 or top 20.
But Milk, I'm going to disagree with you on one thing there, because, you know, I hear what you're saying about watering down the other events, but, you know, the PGA's designated or elevated events, what they've done with those, I think has counteracted a little bit of what you're saying, because the guys who are the top players on the PGA have to show up to those tournaments. So, you know, like we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but the Heritage in Hilton Head, which I got to go to one of the rounds of, traditionally being right after the Masters doesn't have anybody exciting playing in it. But this year, everybody was there. Spieth was there. Rahm was there, having just won the Masters. What's his name? The guy who won it at the end of the day. What's the kid's name from England who won it?
Fitzpatrick,
yeah. I wanted to say Matthews, but I knew that wasn't right. You know, so anyway, so I think I hear what you're saying, Milk, about it watering down, but I think that the way the PGA has done these elevated events counteracts that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess, but these guys are still, they're still top 10. I mean, I don't know. I guess I understand what you're saying. They're these better players, these guys who normally wouldn't play a tournament are now playing them, but you've still got these 10 guys that can compete on any day.
Yeah.
Not there. And it's
just, I mean, it's a shame. That's what
it is. It's a shame.
I think what this highlights is it's a shame that LIV exists to dilute a product that we really came to enjoy, which was the PGA Tour.
Right. And so, by the way, I disagree. I don't think Koepka gives a shit about PGA. He cares about is majors. He always has. So he gets the best of both worlds. He gets his $150 million or whatever he got, and he gets to still play the majors, and then he comes out and wins them.
That's I don't know. I mean, look,
think Koepka, who's kind of a dick, let's be honest, gives a shit about the PGA Tour?
We all watched Full Swing last year or this year. And you all saw how Koepka was really, you know, he was disappointed, upset, hurt, didn't know about what his future held. And he, you know, kind of looked at LIV as an opportunity to take care of his future, cash in. I don't think it had anything to do because he didn't like the PGA Tour. I think it was an out for him, but he was really focused on his injuries and he didn't know at the time if he was going to be able to make a full comeback.
Knee was really bad.
He was not the guy to go. I don't think he would have gone to live, but for the fact that he had injuries and he was worried about his future. But that being said, look, put it in perspective. He is now got 5 majors, tied with Byron Nelson, Seve, and some others. Since 1990, the majors, you have Tiger with 15, Phil with 6, and Koepka with 5. So clearly, one of the best of our generation of golfers.
And it was a great tournament. I mean, it was fun. I mean, there was every shot mattered right up till the sand trap shot, the bunker shot.
Well, can we talk about that? I mean, that had happened. Who had hit the same shot?
Connors.
Connors had hit the same shot the day before. How are you letting that happen? And is that on the caddy? Because how are you not like, well, Connors yesterday hit the lip. I don't know if he used a different club than Connors. Connors did, maybe he did.
It didn't. I mean,
Hovland should have been able to. He should have been able to get a 9-iron over that lip.
Every bunker is an existential threat to me. But I mean, that did not look like that hard of a shot. Maybe it was just the camera angle. Maybe you couldn't get a full grasp of how intimidating that lip was. But it didn't seem like that should have been in play. I didn't think it looked like it should have been in play. I mean, did he just skull it?
He mishit it. Complete he lifted choke. His. He lifted his shoulder. He mishit it.
I mean, it's really the only mishit he had too. It just came at a time that was like not just devastating, but it was a mishit in a bunker that then he got stuck in a. I mean, it was like the worst case scenario, just the absolute worst case scenario.
It just goes this weekend goes to reinforce the notion that the majors are must see TV and. We're gonna have another one in a month. I mean, they come fast. It's awesome.
Yep. All right. Anything else on? I know we're gonna come back to the story everyone wants to talk about from the PGA, but we'll get there. We'll patience, people. But anything else on the tournament? All right. Who wants to punch someone?
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
Milk, I heard you have a little slap.
No, I've got a slap. Does someone else have a real punch?
There was a real punch called in from House, who is traveling right now. We miss you today, buddy. We wish you were here. But I was asked to give a little bit. I mean, once again, we have racism, wielding its ugly head in the soccer world. We know we've talked about the struggles that these teams have. In the Premier League, and now this time it's in La Liga, which I'm told is the Spanish league. And I guess you had a guy, basically the bottom line is the racial slurs. There's players in La Liga now who are just saying Spain is the place for the racism now. This is the way it is. There was an incident over the weekend, I guess, and one of the Real Madrid players was the recipient of a number of slurs. But what's the sad part about it is the attitude that all the players have had, saying this is what La Liga is now. This is what the fans are. This is what happens every game. This was not an isolated incident. And that's the reason for the punch. It's not a couple unruly fans. It's that you have a league where racism and slurs are just common to the point where the players are they've just sort of thrown up their hands and said, we have to just live with it. You have no idea how bad it is.
But doesn't this get back to our where we started? There's no Jim Brown willing to defy that situation and stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we as players won't tolerate it.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, nobody's walking off.
They should have to.
Right. They should be walking off the pitch, you know, both teams arm in arm, right? Saying we're not going to play in front of these crowds, but there's too much money at stake.
Right. To sit there and be like, well, this is it. We just have to deal with it. There's nothing we can do.
Their teammates shouldn't tolerate it.
Right. Right.
They need Roy Kent.
They need Roy Kent. That's right. This is a Roy Kent moment. So, well, that's the punch that I had. And I'm sure that House could probably speak a little more eloquently about it. I mean, the idea that I have to report on soccer is very frustrating to me. It's been a bad day. So much Syracuse fucking praise, and now I got to talk soccer.
Yeah, really. Right. Before we move off of House's favorite sport, let's congratulate one of our favorite listeners, Zeke, for graduating from Tulane this weekend. Good, and getting into law school. Good job, Zeke.
Yeah, that's congrats, right. Zeke. Congrats. Yeah.
Are you also punching him in the face or something?
Who, Zeke? Not yet. Not until we get to the Joe Burrow segment of the show.
Can we not punch him for wearing a Jalen Hurts jersey underneath his graduation gown?
That's definitely punch worthy.
That's punch.
That's definitely punch worthy.
His take on Joe Burrow in its entirety is punch worthy.
Yeah. Milt, go ahead. Give us your slap. Give us what you had as a slap.
No, look. I think it's time somebody stood up and said something about this. I texted about it yesterday during the golf course. I can't stand knocking in the backswing guy anymore.
I love this. You are so right.
Point where it's every shot, it's not just the drives, it's every iron, it's every putt. And the worst thing of all is that it's no longer funny. There used to be some fun. I was the first to admit I laughed when I heard mashed potatoes the first time.
Right.
I was the first person to laugh. It's not even funny anymore. Some of the stupidest, I don't even know what these guys were saying yesterday.
They need to kick them out.
They kick them out, do something. There needs to be a rule. I don't care. I'm sure as hell that's a rule in Augusta. I don't hear it there. So somebody figure this out, PGA Tour. To the dorks, fucking losers who do this, I'm punching all of them in the face, laughing, whatever. At the very minimum, if you're going to continue to do it, say something funny. Come up with something original. It's stupid. That's all I got to say.
Did you hear the guy who yelled Omaha, Omaha?
That's kind of funny. Actually.
All right. That's Milk. Okay.
Milk, what I have to say to you is, you the man.
Right.
In the hole.
In the hole? That's it? You the man?
Okay, Boomer. Let's move on.
Am I getting old or something? What is
you
going
are,
on?
You are just
no,
officially...
you are 100% correct. It's no, so old. It's so old.
You
it's
are so, so right old. And also so old. Yeah.
It's like when Seinfeld, and he's like, no, as a comedian, I'm offended. It's like, say something funny.
Right.
I think that merits a full punch.
Yes.
I think so, too.
Idiot who yells after a guy hits a ball, some stupid saying.
God. That's got to be so embarrassing when you're next to the person, like, cringeworthy.
All right, Milk, give us the lasso.
Barbecue sauce.
Oh, well, I felt bad for Pope that he had to cover the PGA Championship and not mention our friend, our blockhead friend. Obviously, that was almost as big a story, if not bigger story, a bigger story than Koepka's win. You know, Michael Block, the PGA professional from Mission Viejo, California, I've been thinking about this. I don't think we can put into perspective what he did this weekend. To literally go out there and the guy hits a bucket of balls a week. I mean, that's like as little as it gets. He doesn't even play a full round. These guys, to go up against the best in the world and not just, you know, look, you can go out there and go head. That guy can probably go head to head with any PGA. Most PGA professional can go head to head in a one round game on any golf course and probably come really close, maybe lose by a few strokes or whatever, but go out in those conditions and to basically shoot par for 4 days straight.
Yeah.
It was a 10 cup moment. Like literally it wasn't a movie. It happened.
On steroids.
And then you just throw in this ace on 15.
Oh, that was God. Just an
unbelievable shot I've ever seen. Not only was it an ace, it didn't even roll. It just went right in the hole.
It was a swish.
It just went in the hole.
I mean, it was like this.
It looked like my only hole in one.
It's really happening. Then you
that was gratuitous, Pope. That was gratuitous.
Right. We can edit that out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
he gets to 18. He hits a horrible shot on that we all related to. It wasn't even that bad. I mean, but he was off the green. Puts himself in a bad situation. He's got to get up and down to get invited back to the PGA Championship next year. Oh my God. And hits a ridiculous, that chip was absurd, by the way.
Almost harder than the hole in one.
Harder than it was.
He had that much landing area.
He had the smallest landing area, perfectly placed, puts him in a position to make a putt that, by the way, is also completely nerve wracking. He's sitting there. And you look around, there's the entire place is packed. And just think about that. He probably knows in his head, I probably have to make this to get top 15 finish. The entire world's watching me. This entire crowd is watching. I mean, I would have gotten up there, putted it off the green.
I mean, he might as well have been putting for a green jacket.
I mean, it was unbelievable. And it goes in, and this like slowly goes in, like Tiger style.
Uh-huh.
It goes in. He finishes in the top 15. He's coming back. Then these videos have come out of these of the Colonial, the Charles Schwab next weekend, calls him after and says, oh, by the way, you've got a sponsor exemption. We want you to come next week. And then I think he got into the RBC, right?
Yeah, Moose Jaw hooked him up.
He may be the most popular golfer in the country right now.
Paul Miller puts him up. And it's just like, I mean, you know, it's one of those like, this is never give up on your dream moment. I mean, to go out there and do what he did. I mean, he beat.
Did you hear that at one point somebody said that one of the reporters out there on the course looked at Rory and Rory was like, I've never seen anything like this before. And he's like, and I've seen everything on the golf course.
Right. He couldn't believe it. I mean, other than that cackle when he hit that hole in one,
I mean, Milk, we know you hate Rory. But
yeah, I know.
I have to say, I think Rory was like smitten with the whole thing. Like, I think he was thoroughly enjoying the whole day.
I mean, how could you not? I mean, you're right. Playing with this guy. He's getting aces, which have happened. It's only happened like 20 times, right? Since like the 1980. But I mean, look, it's just an unbelievable story. And he might go out next weekend and shoot 115.
Right.
But yeah. And he probably will.
He's just going to go out and get hammered in Fort Worth bars and he's going to live the life of Riley. He's going to be high-fiving guys.
That guy is like average Joe PGA professional.
Exactly. It's almost if Golf Channel put together a script and they're like, we could sell this.
No.
Yeah. He beat John Rahm by 6 strokes over 4 days.
Oh, wait, he gets an ace on 15? No, you can't. That's unrealistic.
That was just unreal. Just unreal.
I mean, it's crazy.
I don't know if you guys remember it, but it was viral. Like, I think it was Thursday. He hit a shank on a par 3.
Right.
A dead shank right. And he got a double bogey, which was pretty amazing considering. But, I mean, he hit the ball. It went straight into a tree. It's like one of our shots.
Right.
I mean, he's like, what the hell? He
doesn't even play. He doesn't play rounds every week. He just goes out and hits a bucket of balls. So unbelievable story.
Great story. Great lasso. All right. 30-second. Any buzzer beaters for anyone? No,
Stars are on the ropes.
I got one. I got to congratulate the Georgetown Hoyas baseball program for the second year in a row. They made it to the Big East tourney, so they're starting postseason play Wednesday at 2:30 against UConn.
I heard they're dedicating a season to Chris Nace.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I heard too.
All-star catcher
who had more shoulder surgeries and plate appearances in his career. All right, anybody got a buzzer beater or anything else?
Nope.
All right, guys. Real big thanks to Jerry for joining us. That was great.
Yeah, thanks for setting that up.
this year. House.
Have a good week.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.